Phil, welcome to the podcast.
Jake, it is a pleasure to be here. Appreciate you having me on. Big fan of the podcast.
Thank you for joining. You had approached me, Phil, and we were chatting a bit about some of your customers and whether or not I'd like to get them on the podcast. And they were all people doing cool stuff. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. But first, I'd love to know more about you. So here you are. We've got an hour. I can't wait to find out about everything that you've been up to. I'm going to kick it off with a simple question. What is it that you're most excited about working on currently?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, the thing about, you know, being a Bitcoiner and working in Bitcoin is like every day is pretty exciting for me, at least. I mean, I kind of just thrive off of seeing what's trending on Twitter, on Noster, and like overlaying that with what's trending in the media. Things actually develop, you know, earlier on the socials, you know, before they actually make it to the media. So I think, as of late, it's, I think probably if I'm going to pick like one thing to be really excited about, there's something that we're working on with, Amboss right now, which is a Lightning Network payments provider. And they released this product called Rails. And so Rails is this pretty much turnkey self-custodial way to earn yield on your Bitcoin. None of this, like, you know, where does the yield come from type of meme. Like it's there's no rehypothecation or anything. But basically, if you're a high net worth individual or an enterprise or a Bitcoin treasury company, which is one of the things that's really trending right now, you can not just HODL your Bitcoin now, you can actually HODL and earn while at the same time improving the performance of the Lightning Network, right? So you're just kind of earning like transaction fees essentially because you're committing Bitcoin to the Lightning Network. It's a really safe, risk-averse way to approach yield. And what, you know, they're saying is 2-4%, you know, APY year over year. But Block just had this, they announced it in Vegas because, you know, they process a ton of transactions, you know, for the Lightning Network. And they said because of their volume, they're getting like 9% interest on their Bitcoin holdings, which is absolutely wild. And I think it's a really fascinating narrative that's developing right now as we move from just, you know, Bitcoin as a store of value to Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. So we're sort of at this plateau where we're kind of crossing the Rubicon of maybe a different Bitcoin narrative. And I think Amboss is kind of at the forefront of that. And but one of the most exciting things about that, too, is the demand for the product. As of right now, I was just talking to Jesse the other day, and he said that they've got more than 250 million worth of Bitcoin, which is like 2,100 plus Bitcoin, that are that have been basically pledged to Rails, and they're on the wait list. So it's a really, I think, fascinating narrative, really exciting product, and I just kind of geek out about like, okay, like who's talking about the Bitcoin treasury stuff? Because that's like a huge point of interest these days. And, you know, the regulatory landscape, and it kind of coalesces between all those things. So long-winded answer.
No, it's a great start because there's tons of things that we can fly into there. I think what would be cool is some additional context. So Amboss is a client of yours. Is that correct?
Oh, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so what does that mean?
So I run 21M Communications. 21M Communications is a Bitcoin only PR agency. We're focused exclusively on helping Bitcoin companies get the media attention that they deserve. So I work with clients like Amboss, Voltage, Castle, and others to help manage their announcement timeline, help them with their comms, basically draft announcements, and go to market plan to get attention for, you know, new products, new partnerships, new and interesting data. So Amboss is just one client of mine, and the focus right now has been pretty heavy on the Rails product.
Really cool. And were you involved in PR before falling down the Bitcoin rabbit hole?
I was, yeah, actually. So my entire career has been in media, but in various capacities. So I had worked in TV. At one point in my life, I was the editor of a surf magazine. That was fun.
Cool.
not a ton of money in that, but I pretty much got paid in free beer and some surf gear and stuff like that. Digital media and everything, print journalism, all of it. I've always been involved in media. But in 2017 is when I first kind of got a little bit involved in Bitcoin, and then did a fair share of shitcoinery stuff. And I was like, well, I want to understand what this crypto industry is all about. And so how can I get my foot in the door into this industry, leveraging my experience? And PR agency, the agency life was really a perfect jumping off point to learn everything about the industry. So I worked for a pretty big agency that did crypto tech and had the privilege of working with a couple, Bitcoin companies at that time as well. And it actually didn't take too long. I mean, it pretty quickly, after seeing the way that things were run inside of the crypto sphere, I knew I was just like a Bitcoin maxi kind of guy. All the typical things that you see on Twitter about, the VC industry pumping and dumping stuff. I mean, it all happens, and I got a front row seat to experience that. But then, like I said, also the pleasure of working with a couple of Bitcoin companies as well. And that's what really sparked 21M Communications.
I have a friend, shout out to Dale, who at one point was working for some kind of crypto newspaper and was writing articles. It's a digital production of some form, and they're obviously looking at basically making as clickbaity titles as possible. And yep. I first met Dale when he did a presentation at an event down in Australia called the Bush Bash. And it was one of the best Bitcoin presentations I've ever seen, purely because of how funny it was. And he was just so, he described his scenario so well. But to not like retell his whole story, but I'm sure you had similar experiences. It's so obvious that crypto is a nefarious, insider run, shit on the retail market as hard as possible game when you've been inside it. Like Dale was, and there was stuff that wasn't even in his presentation I've since heard, like the kind of stuff that they would write internally about trying to get information out. And even people like, this is a while ago now, but when all the Celsius and FTX debacle happened, Celsius were paying people to write good articles about them in the full knowledge that they were completely insolvent. Mm-hmm. So the media businesses that take that money, like, where's the ethical line, guys? Like, that business is going down and you've just sent a bunch of people with it because you got paid. Like, are you serious? It's actually quite sick. And when you really get into like, all right, I'm a Bitcoin maxi and I'm into sound money and I'm into freedom and I'm into self-custody and self-ownership and accountability and integrity, the crypto industry is just full of absolute cocksuckers. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Come on. Are you serious?
Like some of the bigger companies that own these media outlets, right? I mean, you can go into that if you look at like the umbrella of media arms that are owned by these larger companies that have a vested interest in certain.
Yeah, like a Cointelegraph or someone. Yeah.
Yeah. Even a CoinDesk with, being owned by Bullish Capital and everything. Mm-hmm. Right. So they exist as, unfortunately, a way to kind of push certain stuff. I mean, not to say that there are really good reporters at certain publications that take a really ethical journalistic stance. And I don't want to mention the outlets, but there was one outlet that had a whole situation where, like, they kind of wrote this breaking news article about something controversial in the industry. And then it happened to be one of the companies that the parent company is invested in. So they were demanding the editors to take the story down. And the editor said, fuck you. I'm a journalist. You know, I'm not going to take the story. We're not taking the story down. So then some people were fired and then some people left out of just. And you have to. I mean, you can't let these guys get away with that type of shit. So there are some good eggs. There's a lot of bad. Yeah. There's a lot of bad, but there's definitely some, you know, some stars in the night sky.
And it's interesting because there's opportunities that come with that. So as someone who's obviously got expertise in the space, you're like, well, there's companies out there that are building on a Bitcoin standard that have got nothing to do with, you know, print your own token and pump it at the retail market. Yeah. And basically get someone else to take the bag off you. Yeah. And make a quick buck. So that is obviously an opportunity where you're like, well, I can actually do these things that these companies still need. So was it quite easy then to set your own business up? And just chat me through, what does it actually require to run an agency like you do?
When I started 21M Communications, I was doing it on top of the other agency work that I was doing and handling a client on the side. You know, can I ask myself, can I make this work? Like, is there a market
for this? Yes.
Yeah, for this. Like, just to be, you know, because I mean, a traditional business sense tells you if you're going to offer a service, offer it to the largest, you know, group that you can possibly reach, right? So the thought of being exclusionary to Bitcoin and like, am I going to be ready to turn down crypto money, right? What am I going to have to do to start this? So I had to think about a number of different things. The gap that I saw was Bitcoiners wanted to work with other Bitcoiners. At the agency I was at, I was the Bitcoin guy, right? And any Bitcoin client that came through there, I was the one that would handle that account. And so that kind of tells you something. But the bad part about it is these agencies charge so much because they can command crypto VC money. Mm. But the Bitcoin VC money is, you know, a fraction of what you get in the crypto industry. So what happens is they will maybe go to the agency, but they won't be around for long because they can't really afford it. Mm-hmm. Or they find that they work with somebody that like doesn't even care about Bitcoin, right? I mean, do you really, and this is not the feedback I got, like, do you really want to be giving money to an agency that's taking money from XRP? It's like, if I can offer a price point that's going to make sense, that's, you know, lower than what you're going to get out of an agency, and you're working with somebody that knows the ins and outs of Bitcoin, that's plugged in and really cares about it, will go the extra mile, then yeah, I think things will work out. And, you know, it's always hard to start a business because you've got to be thinking about who am I going to hire to help fulfill certain things. And you always have to be thinking about the next business you're going to close. But the thing that's worked for me is just thinking, if I over deliver, if I always go the extra mile and I bring a level of passion and follow through to this, and I work with a couple really solid clients, then that's going to speak volumes. I'll get testimonials. They're going to tell other people, you know, it's going to be a word of mouth thing. And I'm super grateful that that's pretty much how it's went. Ups and downs, of course, but
the good entrepreneurs, they share information with each other all the time. And they'll catch up at certain events, or they'll already be mates because they used to work in another company at the same time as each other, and they've been both, you know, they've gone and started their own businesses. That old saying of like, you get these, they call it like the Airbnb mafia or whatever, is Airbnb IPOs. It's all these guys that have suddenly made millions of dollars and they go off and start their own thing.
Yeah.
And so if you know a few of those, they know each other, basically. And so if you're a good PR guy for one of them, they'll be like, oh, you know, you need some help with that? Cool, Phil. Yeah. You know? And it is definitely how it works. And what's so interesting as well is that idea of the value of one's time is required to be represented as a price. Mm-hmm. But as a startup, you're incentivized to reduce that price just to get through the front door.
That's right.
And that's very natural. But over time, you do a good job for four or five brands that go from being a, you know, a Series A kind of business through to like later stage, they need more and more work, and there'll be other companies coming up underneath them. So yeah, it's a really interesting strategy. What's also crazy is when you touch on the crypto industry payment abilities. You know, I've been doing podcasting in all sorts of different formats the last like 4 or 5 years, and getting paid sponsorship contracts by Bitcoin companies is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Because they just don't have the same funds. Whereas if you were to go out and do a shitcoin podcast, you could be paid absolutely tons of money very, very fast. Why? Well, they can print their own money.
Yeah, brother, that is the ethical. But I think that's why Bitcoiners want to work with other Bitcoiners, because you're, I mean, it's a signal that you're an ethical person, that you've got a moral compass. And, you know, a lot of these guys that are running Bitcoin companies, they had the option to do the crypto thing. Right. That's on the table. You look, oh, man, look at all that funding that crypto is getting. You could do that. Right. But at what cost? So I think it's a matter of just, you know, Bitcoiners looking out for other Bitcoiners, because not like they're doing something charitable. It has nothing to do with that. I mean, you just want to help people, but it's a signal, because other Bitcoiners just tend to be more ethical.
Cool. And so, Phil, teach me about how an agency functions. I've never worked within an agency before. I've used consultants from agencies for different digital tools, whether that be websites or whatever, over the years. You sign, for example, Amboss, you mentioned at the start, you have a relationship with a senior person in a business, and you're like, I can help you do, like, what are the main functions of your agency? And do you then subcontract that out to other people that you have working with you, or you just do it all yourself? And then are you paid on a monthly retainer? Like, just teach me about how the business works.
For sure. Yeah. I reach out to founders directly, and that's just kind of how I do it. I've got my Twitter account, which is like a profile picture with laser eyes and everything. It's not even me. And I just do a fair amount of shit posting. And but so I'll reach out directly on Twitter, you know, right to founders, I'm not hiding anything. You know, I certainly tweet probably some opinionated stuff, but I mean, we're Bitcoiners. That's just the way it is. And I think there's a level of authenticity there. So when I'm reaching out, they see that, oh, here's just a Bitcoiner. And it's an easier conversation to start. One thing I do is just like, before I go in, like I look at the business, obviously I understand it. And when I reach out, like I'm trying to find something specific about the business, not like that I'm giving feedback on, but just, you know, complimenting on, you know, one thing I saw, and trying to essentially just get on a call so I could do a needs analysis. You know, do you guys have anything coming up on an announcement timeline, partnerships, raises, interesting data, anything novel, you know, for the industry? Are you interested in building your thought leadership? Do you want to be doing more podcasts, right? Like, would you like it if you could do more broadcast TV interviews? Do you want to see your quotes in the media more when, you know, you like, you're like, you read an article and you're like, I should have been in there. Like, that's my area of expertise. And but it really depends. Like, part of 21M Communications, I wanted to do is get away from the rigidity of what traditional PR agencies do, which is, we're signing you, got to be a 6-month contract. And, you know, here's everything that you're getting within that scope of work. You know, I certainly love to have, you know, that type of formulaic scope of work, but I've got to bring a level of flexibility, right? Because depending on what stage you're at, if you're an early stage startup, and you've got one announcement coming up, and you just really want to see what it's like and get attention for that announcement, I'll do things on, you know, an announcement basis where we're working together for like 4 or 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it's a matter of wanting to continually build your thought leadership. And PR is this thing that's, you kind of, it gets better over time. It's a snowball effect, right? You get on a podcast and that leads to another podcast and it leads to other opportunities. Next thing you know, you're doing like broadcast TV interviews, and that just takes a concerted effort. So that's really what I try to, I guess, prove to potential clients is, here's what you'd be paying if you had somebody in-house that was focused specifically on this, or here's what you'd be paying if you were hiring out a much larger, a larger agency. You can outsource all your announcement timelines with me. I manage everything, draft the announcements, lead the strategy, keep you in the loop of everything, making sure that we're on the ball every week and trend check, right? So the Genius Act passes. Does that factor into the Lightning Network, right? Does that factor in stablecoins going to the Lightning Network? The answer is yes. So there's commentary that I can get from my clients and then pitch the media that is likely to cover that type of stuff, so that you're getting, ongoing placements in the media, building your thought leadership, podcasts, broadcast TV interviews. But then one of the most, I think, critical things as well is creating your own content. So I also, we do opinion editorial stuff, and the op-eds are a great way to pretty much go to market and be a little bit controversial, right? Like you want to be opinionated, you want to take a stance, and you want to use that, thousand word article to grab some attention. It's non-promotional, so you have to do it in a creative way, but building content and, alongside having a steady flow of announcements and the other, media activity components is definitely really effective. And to answer your question about like outsourcing stuff, I really only outsource, when it's absolutely necessary. I mean, I don't want to hire anyone that's not a Bitcoiner. Is because that's the whole thing. So the account management, everything, big picture strategy, a lot of the fulfillment is actually coming from me, and then I'll outsource to independent contractors, as needed basis, people that I go back to time and time again that are trustworthy.
And it's inevitable that those contractors are probably the people in prime position to become employees one day.
That's right.
If that's where the business, gets to. But as and when, right? There's no point running before you can walk. And if you're able to fulfill it yourself and enjoying doing it and it makes you better at it, then it's absolutely worth doing. It's a consulting business, but it morphs into an agency as it scales.
That's exactly right. I really pride myself on just the open communication with, all my clients. We have shared Telegram or Slack or whatever, and it spans different time zones. So there's just pretty much constant communication about all the moving parts. We have calls, but at the end of the week, it's all like, I'm always sending recaps. Okay, here's where the ball is for all these items. Here's what needs to be fulfilled. Here's who's responsible for that, right? So it just takes a lot of maintenance. And, the clients that I work with for like one-off campaigns, they just get to see that, okay, this is how we operate. And you can understand how month over month focus in these areas is going to yield results.
And so I'm intrigued as to how you measure success. So yeah. I would assume, and correct me where I'm wrong, the founders of these businesses, they're often extremely technical and they've built some kind of innovation that they are running a business engineering a product. And so maybe they're a product manager, which makes them a little more commercial. And maybe they're an ex-consultant from KPMG sitting next to someone super engineering heavy. Whatever the blend might be, they're running a business. And that means find a customer, solve their problem by building something to solve it. That doesn't necessarily mean do the podcast round or watch what's trending on Twitter on a Monday morning. And that's obviously where you can come in. But is it fair to say then that you sell exposure for the business?
That's a good way. Let me write that down real quick.
Yeah, because it strikes me that if I was to sell sponsor contracts for this podcast at some point in the future, that's how I would frame it, in that I have digital real estate that I could sell to someone for attention, whether that be, you know, putting something in a Twitter bio or a banner in a YouTube video or, you know, you name it, right? Or an ad read in the middle of a podcast episode. But ultimately, it's just exposure for a brand. And there's plenty of brands out there that want more exposure. But in a PR sense, how do you manage that with metrics? You can say, by signing up with me, I got you this much attention.
And it's a really great question. And I love the framing that you use there as well. You know, PR is traditionally a very hard thing to quantify, right? So just for instance, what do you value a mention in the Wall Street Journal more than a feature story, you know, of 800 words in like a CoinDesk or another outlet that's not the Wall Street Journal's level? So a lot of that is identifying those types of goals. Okay, where do you want to be? Mainstream media, what outlets? Let's define that. You know, why do you want to be in there? Like, what's
who's your customer, essentially?
Who's the customer? Like, so identifying all that stuff. And you also have to look at competitors. I mean, everything is relative to who you're competing against as well, right? Mm. So I think of it in terms of not just selling exposure, but in terms of increasing mind share, right? How top of mind are you in relation to the competitors in the industry, right? And then a lot of what I do, you know, is looking at competitive analysis, like, okay, or what publications is this company getting in or not, right? And kind of stacking it up that way and being really transparent. When it all comes down to it, you know, it's about, you know, closing more deals, right? Getting more customers. So it's very complementary with marketing. A lot of the time I do work with, you know, founders, but probably 50-50. The other 50%, like I'm working directly with the marketing person, you know, and I mean, it's either way is good with me, but it is really gratifying to hear from the marketing directors and the VPs of marketing how what we've done supports all their initiatives, right? And kind of gives them an extra boost. And so when you have that relationship with the VP of marketing, and I've have gotten some great feedback about the deals that they've closed, that they feel like can be directly attributed to some of the wins that we've landed in podcasts or coverage and stuff like that. And just hearing, I mean, that's like the ultimate metric, right? And you don't always get that feedback, but hearing that is just one of the most gratifying things.
Well, and it can be really hard. I mean, again, to use the podcasting lens, I can see if someone's viewed a YouTube clip, and I can see potentially the macro, like what country were they in, what age were they, what sex were they, but like I can't contact them with an email, and I have no idea if that view ended up on a website that I want them to get to, unless they clicked a link in the show notes, in which case I can track that traffic. But they might actually see a piece of brand. I think there's a common statistic is that it requires you to have seen a brand 7 times before you buy.
Yeah.
I think that's the right number. Like, so 7 touch points, you have to come across something. And so it's all of it combined that creates the customer flow and actual, you know, decision to buy. So even with good, like, viral video content data saying, I can give you this many eyeballs on your brand at the end of, or as part of this podcast exposure process, but I still cannot necessarily say, I drove this many people to your website and these people all bought, because you can't. And the same obviously applies with the PR stuff. interesting. And I like this idea of you sitting alongside the marketing teams as well, because I'm assuming, again, I've never really learned about this type of business before. It's so cool. You will have friendships within major publications that are often useful to the Bitcoin businesses. So you can actually leverage that address book and have five different customers. And when they're saying, oh, we've got an announcement coming, then actually, you know, the tech journalist in these five different places that might find that interesting and give them the heads up it's going to happen, or secure an interview or something. Or I also thought maybe they're doing an investment round, and the kind of people that are interested in investments are actually a different crowd. They're not necessarily customers, but they're people allocating capital. So let's spend a bit of time thinking that through. So how do you, as a PR agency working with infant Bitcoin businesses, help companies raise money?
That's such a good question. Just to circle back on what you're kind of touching on, is just identifying the right reporters, the right outlets, right? I think that there's a... I've talked to founders about this as well, where they've like, you know, reached out to certain outlets that actually aren't even friendly toward Bitcoin, let alone crypto, right? Mm. And like looking at the sentiment of coverage of certain outlets and seeing if we get coverage in here, is it going to be a positive or negative thing, right? Are the reporters that are covering funding news the same ones that are covering partnerships, product announcements? No, I mean, they're all different. And there's a lot of turnover inside of these media organizations as well. So, you know, it's good form, and you're not going to get anywhere if you don't do this. You have to be reaching out to the right person, and not only the right person, but you have to be tailoring that pitch to them specifically. It's a bit more straightforward with a funding announcement. But you know, if you're, you know, pitching, let's say like a data science AI industry outlet, but then you're going to pitch like a Bitcoin magazine, but then you're going to pitch a TechCrunch, the way that you frame that story has got to be different. The subject line in the email should look different, right? Why it's significant should look different. It should match up with the audience. So you have to be thinking about not what your business is, right? And why your startup's so great. You have to be thinking, why would the audience like this? And give them, you know, help the reporter, help that outlet put out something that's really great.
That's such a cool reframe. It's so true, isn't it? You have to know your customer. And in this case, it's the journalists within the industry. And it's like, I'm supplying you a story that's going to get you more clicks than the other guy. So you should probably pay attention, essentially.
That's it. And you got to think, these reporters are getting... some of them are getting hundreds of emails a day, right? So how do you break through? You don't want to be the guy that's just, you know, there's a workflow that you got to follow. When you're pitching news, you don't want to be pitching news and saying, hey, we just announced this. It's not news anymore. But a lot of people do that. Like they think that, you know, okay, like I'll just like share this. I'll share the blog, you know, or I'll share like a, you know, maybe a syndication I paid for, and I'll just let the reporters know, and I'm not going to customize anything. And I'm going to say, oh, hey, like this just went live today. Do you want to write something about us?
Which might not breaking news. Yeah.
It's not news anymore. Well, why would we? You're not giving us anything that's different. And it's just, it's not a story anymore. You really need to put a focus on good storytelling and being different. You know, just finding ways to actually be very vocal about why you're different than your competitors, or, you know, what have you.
Or why you make a good story. It strikes me as I walk this through with you. I always love getting people talking about what they're passionate about, because it just shines straight through, right? This is what you do all the time, and you do it really fucking well. And a CEO of a business doesn't do this because it's not their job. They're running a business, and hence the alignment, right? There's a couple of things you touched on that I'd love to spend some time talking through. So first of all, you mentioned trend jacking.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of when you recently went through a process of trend jacking?
Absolutely. Just this past week, Genius Act passed. It's like there's a lot of opinions, right? You're on, if you spend any time on Twitter, you see people talking shit about the Genius Act or saying it's a 0-1 moment for the industry, and all the attention's on that. You've got tons of reporters that want to write about it. And so going to my clients and saying, hey, what is, here are some questions I'm just going to ask you to kind of prompt your opinions, right? Like, what do you think about the Genius Act? Do you have, are you positive on it, negative on it? Why? How does it help your business? Does it help grow the Lightning Network? Does it give more clarity to stablecoins? And maybe with Tether coming to Lightning Network, which is, people are still talking about that, which is a huge thing, can we tie that in? And so working with my clients to either get commentary with them or help draft commentary, building lists, like seeing what reporters are talking about it, or maybe have talked about it previously and then are probably likely to write about it in the coming weeks, and sharing that commentary, leveraging that, and trying to get them on a call with my clients. So it's like rinse and repeat. The news cycles are so fast these days. It's like, you don't get something that lasts for longer than a week, maybe even a few days. So every day it's about showing up and seeing, is something breaking right now that maybe has nothing to do with that, but we can ride the wave of this trend.
So interesting. And that would make the job interesting, because it's constantly changing. The same way that the investment market, like, stuff changes all the time and prices are changing all day, every day. It's like, hang on, what just happened? Why? And it depends in some ways how plugged in you are. And are you speculating on things? Are you trading things? Whatever an investor might be doing. But it's one thing that I always find fun. It's like the landscape's always shifting. Mm-hmm. And it's a case of, okay, well, actually, I just own as much Bitcoin in self-custody as possible. And you can kind of switch off entirely to it if you chose to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really cool. Okay. And so an area that I'm very passionate about is content creation. You help your customers with content.
Yeah.
Just run me through, let's say I was the founder of a business and I'm like, okay, I need your help, Phil. What do we do?
Mm-hmm. I basically get on a call with you and ask you, I'll find different articles that are out there, news items, right, that have happened recently. Read through those and I'll try and extract some questions from those things, right, that are going to prompt that founder to share an opinion. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what I want to get to the heart of it is, what are you really opinionated about, right? When you're having a beer with your friends and a certain subject gets brought up, what can you ramble on about for 30 minutes? What are those types of things? Because in a sense, it's an opinion and it's an attention economy. So trying to find those items that also kind of connect to the core value proposition of, of the company. Like I did some work with Syntech Digital, which is a mining hardware provider, and they build out sites and everything. And their CEO, Taras, love the guy because he's not afraid to share opinions. And, when we were working together, we had this moment in time where there was a lot of attacking going on, a lot of adversarial attention on the mining industry coming from politicians and regulators. This is at like the peak of, all that bullshit. And, it's like working with the founder, asking them questions, understand, why do you disagree with all this oversight? Why do you disagree with these accusations, these specific accusations that these politicians are making, right? Why do you disagree with these specific regulations that they're trying to enact? Get all that information on a call, and then actually shape that into something that's tangible, that's got a narrative behind it, a clear argument in under 1,000 words, get it approved by the founder, and then get that placed in relevant media that we want to target. Awesome. Exclusively in that. But, it's like I had another client, which was OceanBit. And they were on the other side. They're environmentalists, right? They're about renewable energy.
Yeah, and I know so, Nate, actually. Yeah, awesome.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. Nate's the fucking man. Love him. Love Michael.
Shout out to Nate.
Yeah, what's up, Nate? But, you know, obviously, Nate is very passionate about the environment, about the ocean, you know, scuba instructor and everything, and just like lives in this stuff and climate science. And so working with Nate to get his opinion about why renewable mining is so important, right? And kind of leaning into a different direction. So I think it's just really about like what the core value proposition of your business is and what you authentically care about.
Interesting. You're getting such different businesses there. Shout out to Sam as well, who's building Ocean Bit with Nate. They're great guys, and I hope they're going really well. There's a lot of work trying to get a hardware business up and running, but
Hawaii too's got crazy regulations and got a lot of things.
Well, I encourage anyone out there who's interested in how Bitcoin and mining fits into the renewable energy piece to have a look at what those guys at Ocean Bit are building.
Yeah.
So interesting. So almost you're a ghostwriter.
Yeah, exactly. Byline goes to the founder. I just ghostwrite the op-ed.
And so you have a video call that turns into some kind of written article. So it's like long form writing. Okay. Do you create content yourself as a business?
No. Okay. It's funny, right? Because it's like all my energy goes into the clients.
Yeah.
I keep saying I should be writing and getting it published, and it's on the list. I need to put a concerted effort to that because it is so valuable. Ultimately, I do think that it would help me even like close more business and grow my brand, but it's something that I haven't done today. Although, I mean, I had a history of writing, just not, in the Bitcoin sphere.
Well, I think it's a case of, choose your weapon, right? If it's writing that you like, choose writing. If it's talking that you like, then do a podcast, or if you like making short videos of some form and whatever, it's up to you. But from sitting here right now, it would be really cool to see 21M Communications with some content because it's a good subject. Like, so how does the PR business work? Why is it important? What are some of the results that you've achieved? And without any doubt, that kind of, I've described it before, it's like digital breadcrumbs, right? People pick it up and they find you and they might not be like, oh, I don't need that right now, but you suddenly might get a call in a year or two. So I've been following your stuff. I really like it. You're already selling stuff to people without realizing it, essentially.
Amen, brother. Yeah.
And I wonder if you could carve out an hour a week or something just to pump out a newsletter or something. I know it's easier said than done when you're setting something up and there's always something more important to do, but that could work really nicely.
I mean, newsletter, one of those walking videos where I'm just like walking outside talking about it. A lot of guys are doing that. Something. I should be pumping out more 21M comms content. Absolutely. That's a great idea.
No, that's cool. I do want to circle back to the specific example you gave at the very start about how exciting it is to see the Lightning Network itself growing.
Yeah.
And I completely agree. I saw some stuff around this report of 9% that Block were generating out of their Lightning nodes.
Mm-hmm.
Teach me a bit more about that because I haven't really looked into it myself at this stage. And just the general use case there is Lightning's liquidity requirements is growing because the transaction volume of Lightning is growing. That's awesome because it's very, very cheap form of layer 2 style payments above Bitcoin, the base layer, and is also in theory more private. Run me through that use case and why it's so cool.
One of the reasons Lightning's so exciting is because it's fun dunking on people that have just been FUDing it for years. People love to it.
Lightning doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, Lightning doesn't work. It's a failure, right? It's like bullshit. You're just okay. What do you focus on now? Let me guess. You probably have some other crypto L2 bullshit that get out of here. It's ridiculous. Yeah. They can kind of get away with it sometimes just because data is so historically hard to get from Lightning Network. You can't just go to the a block explorer and look at all the activity that's happening on Lightning. It's a
pure, yeah, there's pure, no mempool. Yeah.
Like you said, there's no mempool. So it's super private. That's the trade-off to the visibility of it. But I mean, Fidelity and Voltage earlier this year did a fantastic report on how the Lightning Network is fulfilling Bitcoin's original promise. And so we were able to get a bunch of attention around that. And we're still getting attention around that because data is so hard to come by. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just fun to prove people wrong. And that's another narrative in and of itself. But Lightning Network is, it's crucial for scaling Bitcoin from just a store of value to a medium of exchange, as I mentioned earlier. And I mean, the mempool is empty right now. It's not always going to be empty on Bitcoin. Right. And so if we want to scale things, we've got to have a viable L2. And Lightning is that option. It is that solution. So it can not, and I think the incentive structure is what's so exciting about it. You can commit your Bitcoin to Lightning. You can open channels, you know, and it's going to grow the capacity of Lightning, and the more capacity of Lightning in Lightning that you have, the better the network will perform, right? The smoother it will be, the cheaper it will be. I could be messing some stuff up there, but I talked Amboss and Voltage a bunch. They can go into the specifics and details of that. But the beautiful part about that, it's yield bearing potential, is I feel like the whole yield, people get so caught up in the crypto sphere because of like this yield potential. Oh, I can stake this and I can earn 4 or 5% back on that. It attracts a lot of attention for that reason alone. And so because it is a native yield opportunity that doesn't ask you to relinquish custody of your Bitcoin, it's not asking you for a favor.
Trust me, bro.
Yeah, trust me, bro. Please, you don't have to do any of that. You don't have to trust anybody, and you can still reap the rewards. You should be doing it from a selfish standpoint, right? You should be doing it from a mentality of, no, like I just want to earn yield, and I want to shift from a HODL only strategy as a Bitcoin treasury company or an exchange to a HODL plus earn strategy without any of the risk, you know? Mm-hmm. And hey, I guess it improves the performance of the Lightning Network as well. It's just, it's a really exciting thing to me. And, you know, Lightning Network is tough too. So it's like I've tried managing channels before and forced closures and stuff. And it's a lot for me personally. I'm a non-technical Bitcoiner, but I think that actually creates the space for companies like Amboss and companies like Voltage and other leaders in the Lightning Network to offer these kind of turnkey services that just make it easier, you know? Mm.
Well, absolutely. That's the cool bit. It's like, okay, this is really hard to figure out. If I figure it out, could I productize it?
Right.
Well, yes. And mm-hmm. Here is the answer. I'm going to be researching the Rails product, you know, once this call is finished. Because
that sounds connected to Jesse. He'll tell you all about it. And
yeah, awesome. Well, and hopefully get him on the podcast and stuff. So In some ways, I think this whole yield discussion is a hangover from the traditional finance industry that we grew up with. You know, I cannot value something unless I can see its cash flow.
Right.
And all of those traditional value investors, they've missed the breakout asset of the last decade because of that lens being, well, Bitcoin's just money. And they missed it because it doesn't have a cash flow. But then as soon as you can show a form of cash flow like this, it helps people get involved. And I think one of the reasons people got so caught up in the bear market of 2022, I mentioned this before. I had a guy who was employed by Celsius come on a previous podcast of mine and was talking about the benefits of never having to sell his digital assets and custodying them with Celsius that would then pay you a yield. And look what happened there. Like, just extraordinary counterparty risk. And just recently, I've been working through different ways to get leverage on my Bitcoin from debt providers. And it's like, okay, so why would I do this? Well, in my mind, it's like, okay, I could take some leverage on some Bitcoin. So it's a loan to value of 50%. You get a stable coin. And I've got a friend, Costa, who's built this really interesting trading system called Minotaur Trading Systems. And so you could deploy the stablecoin with that and actually trade Bitcoin futures. And in theory, you could make 3 to 5% a month, which means you pay back your licensing fee for the bot fairly quickly. And depending on how much size you actually apply to it, you could start earning, you know, really interesting revenues.
Mm-hmm.
The point of explaining all this is I'm in some ways looking at ways to leverage my Bitcoin to create yield.
Yeah.
And the Lightning system that you've just run through is another option. And that's if right. I can do it in a way, so I was looking at a platform today called Debify.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in their self-custodial setup. But I reached out to a friend who I know has had quite a bit of interaction with them, and his feedback was not very good. And that for me was enough to say, okay, I'm not interested in using this product for now, even though I had one other friend that's actually happy using it. You're like, okay, I'm not just going to give my Bitcoin away to someone. It's like, I need to know that I'm dealing with the absolute best people I possibly can be. And the only way to really do that is to try and reduce the counterparty risk as far as possible. Maybe that's where running Lightning channels actually comes in, because you're not taking a stablecoin against it. You know what I mean? There is no like counterparty risk on the other side. Well, interesting. Yeah. I'll have to go and ask Amboss about that. It sounds really
a lot of cool things to unpack for sure. Yeah. But I think you're spot on in terms of this, you know, the whole yield thing being this hangover from the traditional finance system. But it's interesting just how cool is it that we're a part of Bitcoin right now and experiencing the adoption that's happening, right?
It's amazing.
Think about 4 years ago, right? You know, Trump was shitting on Bitcoin. You know, it's for scammers, and look at that now. And it's a really exciting time. We're charting a new course for a completely new financial system, and one that's fair, right? Mm-hmm. Built on transparency, that's trustless.
Morals, integrity, moral. Character. Responsibility. Yeah.
And brother, just to be, one thing I like to do is like a prospective retroactive kind of thing where I just try and visualize myself 20 years from now and what things might look like. What's the price of Bitcoin? What is, you know, who am I with? Right. What does the house look like? What does the yard look like? And it's just trying to imagine those conversations that we're going to be having. All the war stories, right? All the cool stuff to talk about. Oh, you remember this? You remember this? Yeah. And it just makes me appreciative for these days. And I just, part of my mantra, I just say, these are the good old days, right? These are the good old days. It's because it's so easy to kind of, oh man, I wish I, you know, bought Bitcoin when I first heard of it. And I wish I had worked in the industry for longer. I wish I was like one of the OG guys. But no, it's like this is where we're at right now. And it's a really, really great time to be involved in Bitcoin.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Phil. And let's spend a couple minutes before we wrap it up. Paint me a picture of 20 years from now. Like when you envisage that, what do you see?
I see a citadel, you know, a couple hundred acres.
Cool.
Fresh, you know, a well on the property. A stream that runs through it, a bunch of kids taking care of my family and paying it forward. So one of the things I want to do something productive with the fruits of my labor 20 years from now, I want to help churches, maybe open up new churches. You know, I'm a Christian, so that's something that's near and dear to my heart, my mission. So being charitable with that in ways that align with the way that I view the world and be a positive change for the culture, right? And I think it has to start at an individual level. So I get excited thinking about all the good people in Bitcoin and all the good that we'll do in the world. You know, once we're 20 years from now, we're actually able to reap the fruit of our labors.
And look back on it all. I'm just reading at the moment the Bushida Bitcoin, which Alex Fitz has written. So shout out to Alex. And It's a really awesome book that I recommend to anyone. And I'm about, I don't know, 35-40% through, but it's really just talking through the characteristics of the warrior and looking back in history as to the different types of ethos that permeated, you know, the Far East and Japan. Yeah. And he's looking into the specific phonetics behind words, including breaking down Chinese and Japanese language properly. And it's absolutely fascinating how he's pieced it all together. But we've already kind of covered this by the feeling of sickness when it comes to dealing with the crypto industry because of the obvious misalignment of ethics. So they know what they're doing, and they're doing it as fast as they can to make as much for themselves as they possibly can. And that is at a complete juxtaposition to people who are building on sound money, accepting less upfront in order to work for something that they care about. And then that 20-year vision you've just described, a big part of it is actually productivity, one, but two, reallocating what the development of that actually is into, you know, whether it be your faith or other charitable means. That's a completely different kind of person. And that might well be the people that run this future society. So it's going to be, yeah, it's a wild ride. You're right. It's a good phrase, that, the good old days. Well, yeah. What a way to wrap it up. Phil, if anyone's out there starting a business, needs some help with PR, what's the best way to reach out and get in touch with you?
Yeah, reach out to me. You can go to 21mcommunications.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Cold Hard Sats, like cold hard cash, but sats. Don't be discouraged by the Asian man that is my profile picture. It's not me.
Sorry, I love that so much.
And just, yeah, reach out. DMs are open. I think my email is on the website. However you want to connect with me, you can, you know, pick whatever option you want. And I hope you do. I mean, whether you're just like starting out, you have an idea, want to talk about go to market. You know, I love just sharing information for free. I work with Pleb Lab with those guys as well. And I, you know, part of my passion is just being a resource to any Bitcoiners anywhere in the world. So I hope you reach out.
Awesome. Well, Phil, thanks so much for your time.
Jake, I had an absolute pleasure, brother. Thanks for having me.